I'm not familiar with military artillery.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. We're going to be talking about all of Thursday's action. We're going to be previewing Friday's game. We're going to be shining the player spotlight on Eric Gordon of the Houston Rockets. So,
let's get to it.
A couple of things. Welcome back after the All-Star break. We're ready to go for the final 30% of the NBA season. And of course, we still do podcasts all through the playoffs, all through the off-season. A couple of, you know, obviously not doing 5 days a week through the off-season, but there'll still be podcasts coming all year round. So don't be afraid to keep that subscription going and keep the downloads going for the show. A couple of bits of news I need to hit on before we get started. Thank you to everyone who filled out the survey about the show I put out across the All-Star break. Thanks for all your suggestions. One of the more common suggestions that people offered was you get more guests on the program. And I understand that I would love to have guests on the show all the time, but there are a couple of reasons why in season that can be quite a tough thing to do. A is the timing of when I do the podcast. Obviously, I'm doing it here at about 1:30 to 2 a.m. Eastern time in the States. Hard to get the American guests on there. I know there's Matt who lives in Australia, but to get him on, it's much later in the day. And in terms of just timeliness and getting the show out, getting a person on during these in-season shows is quite a tough thing to do. Also, if I had someone else on offering opinions, the show would go almost twice as long, and that's been my experience in the past, is that getting you multiple opinions on things really extends the show out, and it becomes unwieldily long. That's a bad phrase, and I probably shouldn't have used that word. But of course, once we get to the off-season, the pre-season, the season in review podcast, there'll be guests aplenty on this show. I love having the back and forward with people, but it's more just the timing of these, you know, post-game review, next-day preview shows, that getting a guest on is quite logistically tough in terms of scheduling people, getting the times to work, and getting the podcast into a listenable format. So that's why we don't have guests happening during the season. One other bit of news that I do want to pass on to you guys is the Locked On NBA podcast is going 5 days a week now. So make sure you are checking that out. There's going to be great stuff over on the Locked On NBA podcast. And we're going to have different hosts for each day of the host. It's non-fantasy related, but there's going to be tons of info over there. I'm going to be hosting the Monday show of Locked On NBA. We're going to have Wes Goldberg and David Ramil of Locked On Heat. They'll be hosting the Tuesday version of the show. John Corrales and Jake Madison of Locked On Celtics and Locked On Pelicans, respectively. They'll be hosting the Wednesday show. David Locke will continue to host the Thursday show. And then we've got Anthony Irwin and Adam Mares, who will be hosting the Friday show on Locked On NBA. So make sure you are listening to Locked On NBA as we go to 5 days a week. And now I will be hosting 1 day a week of those shows, with my first show coming this Monday, as we cover the three biggest stories across the NBA on each Monday of the Locked On NBA podcast. Make sure you guys are checking out that and all the great stuff that's going to be happening right across the Locked On podcast network. Also, if you are into baseball, Locked On Baseball, well, that's probably not what it's going to be called, but there is going to be an MLB portion of the Locked On podcast network. A few of the shows are already ready to go. Locked On Cubs is out, I know that. Locked On Angels, I think Locked On Indians isn't far away as well. And we're going to be expanding out to all of the Major League Baseball teams. So if you are a baseball fan, in addition to NFL and NBA, we're going to be covering all of baseball with the Locked On Podcast Network as well. So go and find your favorite team and check out when they get released with their new show to begin this season. We're back from the All-Star break, so let's crack straight in to the monstrous line of the night. And today's one goes to Stephen Curry of the Golden State Warriors. Steph had 44 points, including 8 triples, 6 rebounds and 10 assists, 2 steals. And he did it by shooting 74% from the field and shooting 73% from 3. Hit all 8 of his free throws. An absolutely monster performance from Steph. He's the 5th overall player this season in fantasy. He has missed some time, but he is still doing what he does, shooting over 40% from three, almost 50% from the field, 27 points with 5 boards, 6.5 assists, and 1.6 steals. And I guess the dip in his value has been a little bit of the dip in steal numbers. He had a run there where he was averaging over 2 steals per game. He's at 1.6 this year and was at 1.8 last year, but still an absolutely elite fantasy player. And if your league counts 3-point percentage, he is obviously right up there as one of the best in the NBA in that category. Not quite as high as what he had been in the past in his MVP seasons, where he was 44 and 45%, but still at over 41% this year. He has been an absolute monster, as you're well aware, if you own Steph in any leagues. The waiver wire line of the night goes to PunchBob Shiploke, Bobby Portis of the Chicago Bulls. PunchBob had a huge, huge game here, coming off the bench but playing 34 minutes. Chris Felizio was the starter for the Bulls, but it was Portis who played the majority of the minutes alongside Lauri Markkanen. Portis had 38 points, including 6 triples, 8 rebounds and 2 assists, and in true PunchBob style, had no defense at all and jacked a ton of shots. He was 15 of 26 from the field. That is an extraordinarily large amount of shots for Portis. He also, there was a career high in scoring, a career high in threes, and a career high in telling everyone that he's going to score 40 and then not doing it by missing a game-winning layup. So shout out to you, PunchBob, one of the more infuriating players in the NBA. He needs to be owned in all leagues, though. The defense is never going to be there. He's not going to be a high shot-blocking guy. He's not going to be a high steals guy. He's not going to be a good on-court defender by any measure of that. He's also not going to be as efficient as what he was in this game. He's shooting at over 50% on 26 attempts. That's an unlikely expectation for Portis. But otherwise, he is a guy that you definitely need to own. He'll play minutes at center. He'll back up Markkanen at the four also. We also do have to remember in this game that Paulie Zipsa did have to leave early with a foot issue, giving a few extra minutes there to Portis. And prior to this game, his minutes hadn't been great. He'd played 22 minutes in 3 of his previous 4 games prior to this one, but got a ton of minutes at center because Chris Felizio, as bad as Portis is, Felizio is significantly worse. The young gun of the night goes to none other than the process, Joel Embiid. He was awesome. 30, 13 and 5, 3 threes, 3 steals, 4 blocks, 11 of 17 from the field and 5 of 8 from the line. He was looking like he was going to be the monstrous line of the night as well, but Steph came in late and overtook him. He has been huge this season, Embiid, the 13th ranked player. Played in 45 games, obviously exceeded what he did last season. He's playing big minutes, he's scoring, he's blocking shots, he's getting rebounds. He's doing everything that we hoped he would do, and he's probably doing a little bit more, to be honest. He's going to be a top 10 fantasy guy for years and years to come, assuming he stays on the court. And I have a fairly, I have a fairly high degree of confidence that he is going to be a guy that can at least play, you know, 70 games majority of seasons. And while that might not seem great, it seems good for a bloke who played 31 games across his first 3 NBA seasons. So I'm feeling pretty good about what Embiid's doing, and it was another huge performance from him against the Chicago Bulls. The dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Lauri Markkanen had 3 points, 8 rebounds, 1 block, 1 of 8 from the field, and 1 of 2 from the free throw line. This was not a good performance from Markkanen. He is a guy that started off the season really hot. A lot of that efficiency wasn't able to be sustained. Not surprised at all. He's shooting 25% from 3 over the last month and just 41% from the field. And one of those things that is always, in my opinion, going to hold him back from being an upper echelon fantasy guy is the lack of steals and lack of blocks. And we're seeing that this season. Half a steal, half a block in only in 30 minutes per game. Averaging 15 and 7 over 2 threes. But yeah, that's the sort of the limit of what you get with Markkanen. He should still be owned in all leagues. I had someone ask me if he should be dropped. No, like, I know this was a bad performance in the last month. Hasn't been great for Markkanen, but he's still a guy that is a must-own player. His minutes aren't going to be limited in any way, shape or form for this team moving forward. There'll be some rough nights there. Not as rough as this one, clearly. But yeah, you just have to deal with the regression that's occurring with his shooting. After starting out as hot as he did, he has now struggled his way through to some pretty piss poor numbers over the last month for Lauri Markkanen. Let's move in now and look at the games in a bit more detail. There were six games on, but there's some weirdness with the Kings and Thunder game. There was a statistics machine, I don't think that's the right word, a stats, whatever the thing is, the stats and scoreboard, it stopped working for the Kings and Thunder. So we don't have complete stats. We have no idea what the stats that people put up, what minutes they played. So me going through that game, especially from a Kings point of view, I'm not really going to touch on it because I just don't have, I didn't watch all of that game, and no one was able to accurately determine the playing time of all these guys. Now, by the time you listen to this, maybe that's been fixed, but at the time of me recording it, we have no idea. I have some sources telling me that Zach Randolph played 37 minutes. I have some telling me he played 24 minutes. There's no official score for it through all the NBA official stat systems, and hopefully that will be fixed. But at this point, we just don't have that information, so won't be able to give you an accurate assessment of that. The Brooklyn Nets and the Charlotte Hornets. The Nets pummeled once more. They made a change to their starting lineup. D'Angelo Russell moved into the starting five. Quincy Acey moved to the bench with Damari Carroll moving up to the four, and the blue swimmer Alan Crabb moving to the three. Let's start with Russell. He played 32 minutes, had 19, 4, and 5. Two triples and a block. It's on for D'Angelo Russell. Make sure that he is not on any waiver wire. He is poised for a big second half. Probably top 70, maybe top 40. That might seem like an exaggeration, but if he's playing 32 a night, the top 40 is easily in reach, and he played alongside Spencer Dinwiddie. We do have to remember that Caris LeVert was out of this game, as was Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, so that might have somewhat of an impact on Russell's playing time, but I'm not overly worried there. He should be owned. Dinwiddie had 12, 4, and 9. The big surprise, I guess, is Dante Cunningham playing 27 minutes, getting 22 and 12 with four triples, four assists, and a block. He is nowhere near this good. And we do have to remember, much like when talking about Russell, that the Hollis-Jefferson was out. So when Rondae comes back, you know, where do the minutes go? Jarrett Allen and Rondae is potentially the front court of the future. Quincy Acey and Dante Cunningham, not so much. So I don't see Dante playing 27 minutes a night. I don't see him hitting four triples a night. I don't see him shooting 67% from the field or sporting a usage of 22%. So while this looks sexy, it looks flashy, there are factors that you have to bake into it going, well, that's not going to happen again. And someone else has got to be added into that mix, and one of these players is going to have to lose playing time. Does Damari Carroll move back and play exclusively at the three, leaving Dante and Quincy to be the backup four and five? Or does Cunningham or Acey move out of the rotation completely? One thing I can tell you for sure is that Jahlil Okafor has zero value in any league. He did not even play in this game. He has struggled significantly, and with Hollis-Jefferson coming back, it's going to make it all the more difficult for him. Jarrett Allen played 26 minutes, 9 and 7 with a steal and two blocks. Many people have asked me, do I drop him? I would absolutely not be dropping him. The 26 minutes is nice. He got two early fouls but still managed 26 minutes. It is going to be up and down with him, but I still like the production you get from Allen, and he should be owned. He's a clear own to me over, say, like I had someone ask me, do I drop him for Dante Cunningham? Like, I would never make that move in a million years. Allen is going to get the priority there, and there's a legitimate chance that Cunningham, once Rondae comes back, gets pushed into a minute role of, you know, 12, 13 minutes. That's a distinct possibility. On to the Charlotte Hornets, more of the same from them. Kemba had 31 with 7 assists and 2 steals. Play your point guards against the Nets. Dwight Howard had 15 and 24. Play your centers against the Nets. This is just what happens. Big numbers come. Limited minutes for Kidd Gilchrist. Limited minutes for Marvin Williams. Neither of those guys are 12-team players, in my opinion. They are more 14-team league guys, as is Jeremy Lamb, who had 9, 4, and 4 in 23 minutes. Numerous people tweet at me, are they still holding on to Jez? I just don't see it. I don't see the need to be holding on to Jeremy Lamb in any sort of standard sort of format. Let's go on to the next game, the New York Knicks and the Orlando Magic, another game with lots of interesting things happening. The Knicks did make a change at starting point guard. They moved Emmanuel Mudiay in ahead of Jarrett Jack, who was entirely out of the rotation. I still have absolutely no idea why they won't use Frank Ntilikina in that role. They did close the game with Ntilikina at point guard, and he played 30 minutes to Mudiay's 23. Ntilikina had 7, 3, and 2 with a steal and 2 blocks, while Mudiay had 8, 5, and 4 with a steal. Mudiay is not good. I don't think he will ever become good. I think he does have a higher ability than Ntilikina for this season to become fantasy relevant if they play the same amount of minutes, but I don't know exactly how this is going to pan out. The more interesting player that, well, the one that most of you are going to have questions about is Trey Burke, who played 30 minutes and had 26, 4 and 6 with 2 threes, a steal and a block. And let me just get this out there now about Trey Burke. A couple of things I need to get out about Trey Burke. One, he will not shoot 55% from the field as he did in this game. And two, he's not going to have 32% usage as he did in that game. He might have a game with 32% usage. He might have another game with 55%, but he won't be able to do these two things combined on a consistent basis. The next part about Trey Burke is he doesn't really play point guard in New York. He is the backup shooting guard behind Courtney Lee, who started and played 14 minutes. And if you own Courtney Lee in 10, 12, or probably even 14-team leagues, he can go. I've been saying that for a while. He can be pissed off pretty comfortably. Burke is basically a scoring guard and not a facilitator. He did have the 6 assists, but they run him mainly as a shooting guard with Moutier and Ntilikina, even though those two do play together. But they're the two guys who are running the point the majority of the time. So it's not that Burke is playing over Frank or Burke is playing over Moutier. It's Burke is playing over Courtney Lee. So that's the way that that seems to be looking. Timmy Hardaway played 35. He had 23, 3, and 6. While the concerns come in here for Mick Beasley and Enes Kanter, 23 minutes for Beasley and 21 for Kanter. Kanter still double-doubled. He had 12 and 12, and Beasley had a weird line of only 7 points, but 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, and 3 blocks. I'm easily just holding on to these guys to see what this means. Will they continue to limit Beasley to 23 minutes? Now, they did that so they could give more minutes to Lance Thomas. Like, I don't get that. There's no young player in that front court who is coming in to take these minutes away from Kanter or Beasley. Luke Kornet played just 8 minutes, and you had the Cock Monster play 19. He had 14 and 8, O'Quinn, with 3 blocks. And you know I love O'Quinn. If he can get 21 minutes a night, then he does have 12 team value. But he didn't even get that in this one with those two guys limited. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. Lee is toast. Burke is an interesting add, but those numbers aren't going to stick. While Moutier and Ntilikina, it's going to be back and forth with those guys. And I think they both end up out from here on out outside the top 100 would be my guess. For the Magic, Nick Vucevic was back. As Gordon was back, both limited in minutes, 25 for Gordo, 24 for Vuce, 19 and 6 for Vucevic, plus he had the Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
It was awesome to have him back. I see many people do ask the question, oh, is he going to be shut down? If he was going to be shut down, he just wouldn't have come back from this injury, I don't believe. Same with Gordon, but they're back, they're playing. Vucevic came back, I think, with about 10 games left last season and played. I don't see them just not playing from here on out. Mario Hezonja, 27 minutes, 15 and 4 with 2 steals. That's really productive. But we've still got 8 minutes that need to go to Gordon. We've still got 8 minutes that need, or 6 minutes that need to go to Vucevic. Where do they come from? Do they come from the 4 minutes that went to Kem Birch? Probably. Do some of them come off the 20 minutes that Bismack Biyombo played? Probably. Does some of them come off the 19 minutes that Wes Iwundo played? Probably. But getting 27 out of Hezonja long-term might be just a little bit of a stretch. He still has value now, but there's a bit of a stretch there. DJ Augustine, 27 minutes, 13, 2, and 4. Totally fine minutes. The usage is going to dip with Gordo and Vuce back, but it's not really going to affect his minutes too much. It's going to be him and Shelvin Mack playing all of the point guard minutes, and Augustine is still the guy that I own over Mack. While not being a 100% must-own guy, I still think he has viability. While John Simmons, 12, 4, and 5, hurt his ankle, struggled from the line, I really don't rate him at all long-term. You can own him, fine, but I just don't see it as a long-term situation for his value. The next game, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Chicago Bulls. Talked about Embiid. Let's talk about Benny Simmons, who had 32, 7, and 11. A steal, a block, 72% from the field. Not great from the free throw line, but did hit the game-winning free throws in a masterful loss by the Chicago Bulls. Simmons is still my rookie of the year pretty comfortably, and it's going to take a lot to change that. Maybe there's an inbuilt Australian bias now. I don't think that that's the case. I just think that Simmons has been that good and he continues to be that good. Bob Cove struggled 8 and 3 with 2 triples in 30 minutes. I would still own him, but I can realistically see a scenario where in a couple of weeks you're heading into playoffs that you might need to drop him. Marco Bellinelli wasn't quite as good in this one as he was in his opener, and that's to be expected. 5 points in 25 minutes, nowhere near a 12 or 14 team league guy. While JJ Redick hit his 3 triples and TJ McConnell had 9 points and not a 12 team guy either. On to the Bulls. David Nwaba started, played 33 minutes, had 21 and 9, 3 triples, 2 assists, 1 steal and 1 block. And like I talked about with Trey Burke, before. There's a couple of things here. Nwaba is not going to shoot 3 of 3 from 3. He is a piss-poor 3-point shooter, about 26% for the season. He's a pretty decent field goal percentage converter. He's not normally a guy who gets 19% usage like he did in this game, but he can rebound, he can get steals, and he can get blocks. For the foreseeable future, Justin Holiday and Robin Lopez will be out of the rotation, but that's not necessarily, and it's not for the rest of the season. The Bulls are going to evaluate their lineups in blocks. We don't know how long those blocks are. Maybe it's a week, maybe it's 2 weeks, but Nwaba is starting for now, and Holiday is sitting in his street clothes. So Nwaba has some value if you're looking for those defensive numbers. Forget the points. Forget the threes. That's an aberration. That's just not the player that he is. This shooting is not who he is. But he's an aggressive rebounder who gets some steals and blocks, and that can be useful. Zachy LaVine had 23, 3, and 4 with 5 triples, while Chrissy Dunn had 5, 4, and 5. Wasn't a great game from Dunn. More back to the Minnesota style of Dunn, where he went 2 of 11 from the field. And Noah Vonleh looked okay in his backup minutes, 3 and 7. But I want to talk about my boy Campaign. You know, I've been campaigning for Campaign, and that is a horrendous joke, for basically since he entered the league, and I thought he could be a decent point guard. I really liked what I saw from him after his rookie season at Summer League. He won the MVP of the Orlando Summer League and then broke his foot. And since then, he hadn't been the same. He struggled in Vegas last year at Summer League. He struggled in his time with the Bulls at the end of last season, and of course he had surgery on that foot again, which was clearly still bothering him. But his first game here for the Bulls, 7 points, 7 assists, and a triple one in 20 minutes, you're in a 20-team league, you're in an 18-team league, you have to snap it up. He's going to be the backup point guard for the majority of the rest of this season, if not all of the rest of this season, and he is a guy that can fill up many, many statistical categories. He can hit threes, he can score, his field goal percentage might be an issue, but he can get steals, he can get assists. He is going to be a valuable player for those very deep leagues. So keep an eye on him. I'm probably the only person left who thinks that Campaign can actually still be a serviceable NBA player. So let's see how that pans out. As for Chris Felizio, 12 minutes, 5 and 3. He's just not very good. He should be nowhere near your standard league rosters. Nowhere near it. The Washington Wizards and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Speaking of my boys, Tomas Satoransky, 17, 4, and 8, 2 steals. He's really, really good. He only took 7 shots, but he hit 6 of them. That's an unrealistic conversion expectation. But it's what he does in other areas. Assists, rebounds, steals. He hits 3s. He is a must-own player until John Wall comes back. And even then, Wall will be eased in, and Satoransky will get minutes, and Tim Frazier will not play at all. Otto Porter had 15 and 8. Oubre had 17 and 5 with 2 steals. The Wizards went small. That confounded the Cavs, and that limited guys like Markieff Morris, Marcin Gortat, and Jan Mihinmi. And Oubre got more minutes. He is almost as inconsistent as they come, Cali, and I'd leave him for the 14-teamers. 18 and 9 for Brad Beal, while Markieff had 9 and 8 in 28 minutes. The minutes, you know, they spiked when Wall went down, but they've come back down to that 28-29 zone for Morris lately. And I don't think that in a 10-team league, you can do better. In a 12, you might be able to do better as well. As for Gortat, why are 77% of people still owning him? 6 and 3 in 18 minutes. Just get this guy's ass off your team in 12-team leagues. Just get it off. Best nickname in the NBA. Worst production versus ownership percentage. Just no need for it. On to the Cavs. George Hill and Jordan Clarkson had basically split minutes the first two games. In this one, it was 31 minutes for Georgie, 17 minutes for Clarko. Neither guy really played all that well. I don't think that Clarkson is a 12-team league guy. I've been on record saying that. Rocket Rodney Hood had 8 points in 27 minutes. I don't think he is a 12-team league guy, whereas Hill is borderline. The 31 minutes is encouraging, but the production, 2 of 10 for 6, 3, and 3 is not. But he can be a high-efficiency shooter. He hits 2 or 3 more buckets there. You're talking 12, 3 or 3, and then my attention is piqued. And I go, oh, well, that's interesting. The minutes and the production, there's something extra happening there for George. Larry Nance struggled, 6 and 3. It depends who else is around, but I wouldn't be labeling him as a locked guy that I couldn't drop on my team. While Chetty Osman, only 17 minutes. After that initial big game, he's had 2 pretty poor ones, and he shouldn't be anywhere near your 12 or 14 team leagues. LeBronald had 32, 9 and 8.
LeBron James.
2 steals. A huge game from him. Well, Tristan Thompson actually had a strong one as well, but I'd label him more as a streaming type option. Well, the plumber, J.R. Smith, the shots are going in. Look at him really just as a 3-point streaming sort of a player. As for the Thunder and Kings game, again, I don't have a full idea of what these stats actually mean. I don't have any trust in them being accurate at all. All I know is that Garrett Temple started at point guard and the Kings closed the game with Vince Carter, Garrett Temple, and Zach Randolph on the court. Bogdan Bogdanovic was limited in his playing time. Scal Labissiere returned. I'd be adding Scal wherever he is around. And the Kings in general, the Kings have five games next week. So even a guy like Justin Jackson, Budrick Hield, Labissiere, if they're available, you add them because those five games, they're not going to sit those games. Those five games are going to be useful. Frankie Mason might be a useful player. De'Aaron Fox sat this one out with conjunctivitis as well. You guys in America call it pink eye. We don't call it that at all. So it's always weird to hear those differences. Like something you guys call mono, we don't call it that either here. We call it glandular fever. You guys strep throat, we call it tonsillitis. It's just different hearing all those terms. So De'Aaron Fox was out with pink eye / conjunctivitis, and again, just weird ass rotations. Costa Kufos also out of this one with an illness. The last game of the night, the Clippers and the Warriors. We had DeAndre Jordan have 16 and 14 with 3 steals and a block. Solid from him. Toby Harris and Lou Williams both scored over 20. Miloš Teodosic started for Avery Bradley. He wasn't supposed to start. It was going to be Ty Wallace, but he had some travel arrangement mix-ups, and then Wallace ended up starting the second half. Wes Johnson not in the rotation. So Wallace could be that deeper league guy if he's going to. He's only got a couple of days left on his 45-day two-way contract. Could very easily be converted into a full-time contract and then be a regular part of the rotation. Montrezl Harrell had 15 and 4. Not much else there. I still think he's just a deeper league guy. Like, the minutes upside is just significantly limited. Austin Rivers playing way more minutes than, of course, he should. 14, 3 and 5, but can be a 12-teamer. While the Rooster suffered a bruised hand. We don't know the severity of it at this point, but given it's Gallinari, probably going to cost him about 3 or 4 seasons, I would say. 15, 3 and 2 for the Rooster. Wasn't a great shooting night for him, but comfortably a must-own guy. Durant had 24, 3 and 8 with 2 blocks. Draymond had 14, 8 and 6, but that's all, you know all that. The interesting thing is, well, two things. JaVale McGee started over Zaza Pachulia, and he is going to start the next game. But Steve Kerr also said that when Jordan Bell comes back, he's going to immediately be in the rotation. I think that this switch at starting center definitely opens up the window of Bell having a starting role on this team. Kevon Looney was out of the rotation entirely in this one, so Bell can easily move back in. It's not like Looney's playing so well that Bell's not going to get that playing time back, and he could start for the stretch run for this team. Don't be shocked. Am I adding him in 10-team leagues? No. 12s? No. 14s? Probably not. Anything deeper, I'm immediately adding Jordan Bell just to see what goes on. He practiced, and he could be back very soon. And if he's playing a 16-minute role in a 16-team league, that's useful. If he plays 20 minutes, it becomes 14-team. If he plays 22, it becomes 12-team. I think 22 is probably pushing it, and I don't think he gets there. But I think this change definitely opens up the possibility that he can start maybe 50% of the remaining games and play 23 to 24 minutes and be a useful option. So keep an eye on it. Be watching it. Be watching for when he comes back. But in deeper leagues, go and snag Jordy Bell, because this change, I believe, has opened up some very interesting possibilities for his value as we move forward for the rest of the season. Let's transition straight into talking. Now, so one of the other things I got with feedback with the show is the show goes too long, and I'm comfortably aware that the show goes too long. I try and squeeze as much information, try not to miss stuff, but I'm going to cut out some of the extraneous bullshit. Let's just go straight through, no break. Let's cut out the question of the day. For now, maybe we'll introduce that in the shorter off-season podcast, but for now, let's just push straight through and blow out this information as much as we can, rather than me have to sit here and record this for an hour and a half and you listen to it for an hour and a half. Brevity was an overwhelming feedback feature of that survey that we got. So instead of me talking about brevity, let's actually get into it. The player spotlight. Today's one goes to Eric Gordon of the Houston Rockets, a player that was requested, as all the player spotlights are. Gordon's an interesting player for this team who started off the season red hot, and I banged on and I banged on. I couldn't have drummed it home enough that you had to sell him high. While Chris Paul was out, you had to sell him high. He was a top 50 player in that time. And then Harden got injured, and he was able to maintain that value. He was able to maintain that value while Harden was out. But with those two guys back, it's a struggle. He's outside the top 110 over the last 3 months, and some of that's without Harden. He's outside the top 190 in the last month, playing only 27 minutes per game. There's a real issue here with Gordon, and it's to do with how those two run it. Now, his early season value was buoyed by his assist numbers, and it was buoyed by great free throw percentage on a large amount of attempts. But with Harden and Paul around and those guys playing 48 minutes as the point guard in games that are close, he doesn't have the ability to get those assists. He doesn't have the ability to drive and get to the free throw line as much. He's more just a spot-up shooter. And you can see that in the differences in what he does as a starter, which is the games when Harden and Paul miss, or when he is on the bench. In his games as a starter this year, he's played 33 minutes per game and averaged 21 points, 3.6 triples, 2.8 rebounds, and 3.6 assists with a 56 true shooting percentage. In his bench games, which is 27 games, 24 as a starter, 31 minutes per game, but only 16 points. So 2 minutes less, but 5 points less per game. 2.5 triples only, but the real stark numbers are these other ones, or the assist numbers in particular. 3.6 assists down to 1.3 assists, and that's where the value goes. That's what takes him from being that top 50 sort of a guy to being a guy that's not going to break the top 100. So averaging your 1.9 rebounds and 1.3 assists in his game off the bench, that just doesn't cut it. Now, he's been an exceedingly positive player for this team this season. Yeah, really provides great value, and he's almost a luxury at times. Defensively, he still has his issues, but he is a positive for this team. They're a plus 7.9 with him on the court, which is obviously a really, really impressive for Gordon. But will he be able to maintain value enough to be owned? And in 10-team leagues, I don't think that's the case. In 12-team leagues, I would think that in the majority of times in a 12-team league where you own Eric Gordon, if you honestly appraise your roster, he's probably the worst bloke on your roster, or he's the second worst. And if that's the case, if he's the worst guy, you can use that spot. Hey, let's take a flyer on David Nwaba. Let's try Trey Burke. Because the usage stuff, the ball handling a bit, it's not always usage. People get usage confused with lots of different things. Usage, as you should be aware if you listen to this podcast, it's turnovers, it's field goal attempts, it's free throw attempts. That is what usage is. It's got nothing to do with assists, rebounds, steals, blocks. It's got nothing to do with what your three-pointers are. It might be a positive on your percentages. It might be a negative on your percentages. Bumps in usage don't necessarily mean bumps in fantasy value. They can, but they don't always, and people need to get that understanding through. So his usage has dropped, but it's more the fact that the assist numbers, the driving drops when he is on the bench as opposed to when he's starting. Now, Gordon is 29 years of age already. If the Rockets re-sign Chris Paul, as we expect them to do, I think he's going to be a player who really struggles to get back inside the top 100 this season, or at any point in the future. He's the 93rd ranked guy this year, but I reckon by the end of this year, he won't be a top 100 player, and I think that will be the trajectory for his career, a guy who plays 25 to 28 minutes and hovers outside the top 150. So while he's a real, key factor on this team, I think there are a lot of things pointing negatively towards him in terms of his fantasy value. Let's get straight into the preview for DFS. Another thing that I think was taking up time and I'm not sure was creating a huge amount of value was the perfect DFS lineup. So we're going to scrap those as the podcast moves forward, just to shave off 5 minutes of the show to really try and give you as much value as possible on the program. The first game we're going to talk about, it's a massive, massive Friday for DFS. 11 games, so again, be careful with the spending. There'll be some interesting rotation decisions for certain teams that we're unaware of. A bit of uncertainty after the break as well. The first game up, we've got the Atlanta Hawks and the Indiana Pacers. Dennis Schroeder, Kent Bazemore, Ersan Ilyasova, they all missed the last game before the break. They all will be back. Isaiah Taylor is the only one who we've got a question mark over. He's questionable with an ankle injury. If he is out, there's a chance that Andrew White gets those minutes. Malcolm Delaney is already ruled out, so Andrew White could have a sneaky role in this one. Don't rule him out, while Tyler Dorsey should also get somewhat of a boost in this situation. We don't know if Ilyasova will move back into the starting lineup, although it appears that he will. Budenholzer basically said that he would. It's not 100% confirmed, but it pretty much is. So those of you who are ready to get your John the Baptist Collinses out, maybe not so much, going to happen straight away. At point guard, Dennis Schroeder is at $7,000. The Pacers have been a very good defensive team against point guards this season. Schroeder's been quite good. I don't love him here. I think there are better options around. I think there are better ways you can go. As for Corey Joseph, $5,200, big game for him post All-Star break. A good matchup. I just don't trust his ability to produce, especially at that elevated salary. Sure, you can use him in a tournament, and it is a positive matchup. He is just not a positive player. You got Tyler Dorsey at $3,700, who I don't hate as a tournament option also. At shooting guard, Vic Oladipo is at $10,000, and that is obviously a very, very high price, but the matchup is exceedingly positive for Vic. He can comfortably drop 50. He's averaging 55 over his last five, so definitely not a wrong choice to put him in, but you really do have to structure your lineup correctly around him. While Kent Bazemore at $5,900, I just hate that price for Bazemore. He will be back after missing the last game. He's too inconsistent for me to think that's going to be a worthwhile situation. At small forward, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince is at $4,500. Maybe as a tournament guy, definitely not for any cash situations. While the little dog, Glenn Robinson III, returns to action for the Pacers, he's going to be significantly limited after missing all of the season with an ankle injury. But there is a possibility that that cuts into Bojan Bogdanović and Lance Stevenson's playing time. So we're not going to be using Lance. It's going to be tough to use Bojan at $5,500 as well. The Baptist at $5,500, Johnny Collins. Nice game in that start in the last one. 31 points in 31 minutes. He's played well against the Pacers this season, 28 points in 27 minutes. I think that he's more of a tournament guy just because I can't trust what Budenholzer is going to do with his playing time. Sabonis at 49, no. Thad Young at 65. I like Thad Young here. I think that's a pretty reasonable spot for him. And I don't like Ilyasova at center. Miles Turner. We know he's inconsistent, but this matchup's really tasty. I think you have to have him into your tournament player pool. Far from a lock, but definitely a value guy. While The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman at $5,600, more of a tournament guy than a cash guy. Not really many cash looking blokes in this game, if I'm going to be 100% honest. On DraftKings, much of the same. Oladipo at $9,600 is a little bit more attractive than what he is on FanDuel. Corey Joseph at $49, still just some tournament value there. Turner is probably a little bit too highly priced. I don't mind Thad at $64, but it's not standing out. John Collins at $55, all the same sort of stuff. No one who really stands out as having significant value on DraftKings as opposed to what I mentioned where the value lies for those players on FanDuel. Let's move on to the next game now. We're going to be talking about the Boston Celtics and the Detroit Pistons in Detroit. The Celtics are favored by one, and the total is 205 points here. Marcus Smart will be back. We don't know if Shane Larkin will be back. We don't even know if Shane Larkin would be in the rotation with a fully healthy Celtics squad, especially now that Greg Monroe is there. The other questionable guy we need to pay attention to is Reggie Bullock of the Detroit Pistons. If he misses, will it be more Jimmy Nelson? Probably not. Will it be Lukey Kennard? Will it be some more minutes for Stan Johnson, some more minutes for Jimmy Ennis as Johnson pushes across to the two? They're the couple of options there. I'd like Stan as a GPP guy if Bullock happens to sit, and maybe you throw Kennard in. But Van Gundy's handling of Kennard this season has been, to put it kindly, frustrating. At point guard, Kyrie is at $7,900. The Pistons recently have been allowing some pretty decent point totals against, you know, all four opposition point guards. I like that Kyrie is down now under $8,000. I don't think it's a bad choice to use Kyrie. He can be used in cash. He's got a fairly safe floor and a pretty high upside there also. Ish Smith at $5,800. He had a big game post-break, but prior to that, he'd really been struggling and seen himself bench for Jameer Nelson quite often. So I'm not really super interested in looking at Ish in this one. Guys like Rozier with Marcus Smart back is going to be tough to rely upon. Jameer Nelson, Langston Galloway, not a lot to love. At shooting guard, Jaylen Brown at $5,400, always a tournament guy, but I find it really hard to rely upon him. You can tell by the amount of duds of the night that he's accumulated that his performances do oscillate quite a bit. Marcus Smart back at $5,000. The last game before he broke his hand after punching a pitcher frame or whatever he did in his hotel, he dropped 38 points, and he'd been playing fairly well up until then. I don't think that I'd want to use him in cash at this point. Kennard, yeah, more of a tournament guy if Bullock is out, as I mentioned. As for Reggie at 4,800, I don't really like it. Yeah, he's been playing well, he's been shooting well, but he just doesn't do enough in other areas. And if the shot doesn't fall, then what else is Reggie Bullock giving you? And the answer in most of the cases is nothing. Stan Johnson at 46, I'd be all over that if Bullock is out. While Jason Tatum at 52, the production has been very, very poor lately. Just 17-point average over his last five games. The matchup is a neutral one for Tatum. Johnson's a quite good defender, and that could have an impact, so not really getting heavily invested there. Our power forward, Tone Tolliver's at 3,700, always worth a look as a tournament guy, but power forwards tend to get eaten up against the Celtics, so that would lean me against him. Or Blakey Griffin at 8,400. Look, if he came in at 8,000, I'd be way more interested in Blake. I think he can very easily get to 37 or 38, but getting to 44, I'm not quite sure that it's there, and I think there are other options that we can go. Marcus Morris not happening. At center, I like Andre Drummond, 9,700. Rebounding centers can pull in big numbers against the Celtics, and that's what Drummond can do. He averages 44 the last three times against Boston. Yeah, a 50-point game is clearly not out of the realms of possibility for Drummo, so I'm fine with using him. As for Al Horford at 6,900, probably just a little bit too highly priced. Don't dislike it. He's a fairly consistent player, but not a high-priority sort of guy. Greggy Monroe and Aaron Baines, I don't really think there's a huge amount to see or enjoy with those guys. On DraftKings, Drummo again at 9.3, yeah, really, really happy with that as an option. Al Horford at 67 is not too bad. And then, again, these prices are all very, very similar on DraftKings for this game as they are for FanDuel. Kyrie and Blake are more highly priced on DraftKings, so they're definitely closer to fade territory than what they are on FanDuel. Not feeling super strong about them. Stan Johnson gets that bump. If Bullock is out, Rozier at 5,600 is pretty much a no-go for me on either side, but especially on DraftKings. Let's go to the next one. We've got the Charlotte Hornets and the Washington Wizards. The Hornets on a back-to-back. The Wizards are favored by 3.5. The Wizards on a back-to-back as well, actually. The total is 212 points here. No injuries for us to be concerned with. We know that Johnny Wall is out. So at point guard, we've got Kemba, 8,700. Tomas Satoransky has been an absolute defensive dynamo, and that's a real worry. Along with the back-to-back, the elevated Kemba Walker price tag at 8,700, I don't feel super comfortable with using him in this matchup. Carter Williams, of course not. While Satoransky's at 6,500, he's been exceeding that almost every game, averaging 40 over his last three and 33 over his last five. But that price is pushing it just a little bit too much that I don't really feel comfortable relying upon it. Brad Beal's at 9,000, a nice come down in terms of the price. It wasn't a great game for Beal in this one, and while the Hornets have been really good defending the shooting guard position, I think that Beal is someone you do have to use, or you have to consider to be used in cash just for that floor, and he does have some upside, of course. While Batum at 6,100 has been okay, but I feel like the 5X threshold is almost his ceiling. You know, it's not really, because we know he's had some decent games. But don't really feel super strongly about him. At small forward, there's some options. Kelly Oubre at 49 is a tournament guy. Don't feel comfortable with his consistency. Kid Gilchrist is a nothing. Well, Otto Porter at 7,600, actually putting in some strong games. 32 points is his lowest score in his last five games. Has sort of worked out how to play without Wall at the moment, which is helping his value. So I don't think that he is a bad choice for cash. He wouldn't be one that I would use, but he's not a bad option. At power forward, Frank the Tank at 3,700. A tournament, but that is literally it. Mike Scott, Markieff Morris, Marvin Williams, absolutely nothing to see with those guys. At center, Dwight Howard, 8,600. Dwight has played very, very well against the Wizards. Averages 46.5 over the last three times. You get me 46 at 8,600, I will love that. If you don't want to spend up for Andre Drummond, Dwight Howard, I feel like he's a fairly good option here to at least get you 40 or 42. I feel like he's got a level to get to that. The Wizard centers, Gortat and Mahimi, I couldn't want less to do with them. Let's go on to the DraftKings side of things. Dwight at 78. Now, that's really strong. Really, really like Dwight there. Well, Oubre at 45 is a strong tournament play, but definitely not for cash. Beal, I like. Kemba more playable on DraftKings at 8,200. Otto Porter at 7,000, I think, is fairly strong. And I love Satoransky at 57. That is a supreme, supreme price for Thomas, who, again, is showing you. I don't know where he is. I have to go through and do a full rank of starting point guards. But if he came out to be a top 20 point guard in the NBA at the moment, could I rank him in the top 20 point guards in the NBA? Might be pushing it. Top 25? Absolutely. I think he's absolutely a top 25 point guard in the NBA, and I love what he's been showing, but maybe I'm a little bit biased given I've been pumping him up for about 3 years. Let's go on to the next game. Who is it? It is the Thon McCur special, the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 7.5, and the total here is 215. The Muppet Johnny Henson had been missed the last couple. He is probable with that hamstring, while Tyler Zeller is probable with an illness. I do worry a little bit for Henson's minutes here. I think that the Bucks have a realistic chance of using a three-man center rotation with McCur, Zeller, and Henson, and Johnny playing the bulk, but playing the bulk being 22 to 25 instead of 27 to 30, and that's going to impact what he can do. But if all three play, then I don't think any of them are really DFS options. Kyle Lowry's at 7,900, a good record against Milwaukee despite the relatively good defense that Eric Bledsoe usually plays. I like Lowry here. I don't think this is going to be a blowout scenario where he has to sit the fourth quarter. That makes Freddie VanVleet at 5,000, I guess, somewhat of a risky play. I don't think I'd be interested. Eric Bledsoe at 7,900, like Lowry does well against Toronto. Lowry does well against Milwaukee. Bledsoe does well against Toronto. So using those two guys in a head-to-head with each other, you know, in cash, in tournaments, I don't think there's any problem with that. At shooting guard, DeRozan's at 7,900. Very rare on FanDuel that you see him under the $8,000 mark. I'm totally in on that. Love that at 7,900 for DeMar. Tone Snell, no way. Chrissy Middleton, 7,500. He's been just cranking out numbers on a consistent basis. I don't love that, though, mainly because of that price. I think he's more of a $7,000 guy, a 31-point player rather than a 36 or 37-point sort of a guy. Sterling Brown, Jason Terry, the sexy boy Sean Kilpatrick, no thanks. Yanni at 10,800, you have to love it, have to love that price for Yanni. He dropped 72 in the game before the break, averaging 53 over his last five. Totally fine with using Adetokounmpo. CJ Miles at 36, the Jedi Oji Anunoby.
Hello there.
I don't think you can really use either of those guys. At power forward, Jabari Parker at 39, that's stupendously low for Jabari. Tournament is absolutely an option there, but nothing more. Pascal Siakam, Serge Ibaka. Ibaka at 5,600 absolutely gets my interest going. I don't necessarily feel like I'm ready to lock it in for cash, but there's definitely interest there. The Muppet at 5,000, I'd end up using that tournament only, but even then, more of a fade spot. At center, Valanciunas at 6,800, playing really, really well. I just think that's too high for JV. You give me 5,800, I'd lock it in everywhere. 68, you're needing 35 out of him, and I just don't think that's realistic. Jakob Poeltl at 43, don't really love too much there, while Zeller and McCurr. McCurr does do well against this team. Weirdly, he averages 21 points in 18 minutes the last three times, and at 3,800, maybe that can work for you. But with three centers around now, I think the chances of Thon doing that are pretty limited. So I'm going to go against the Thon destroys the Raptors narrative in this game. Where are we? Let's look on DraftKings now. And a lot of value over here. Lowry at 74, I love. Bledsoe at 6,900 is just stupendous. Love that. Valanciunas at 62, I'm in on that. That price is more realistic. He could easily have a 32, probably a 30-point floor, which is all right, and then go for 36 or 37. So I'm okay with that. Yanni at 10.5 is really good too. Chris Middleton at 6,700, way more appealing on DraftKings, and he could be in play. Barker at 52, better options. The Muppet at 48, you can do better than that. Well, Jabari Parker at 4,100, I'd only take him on FanDuel because of the low price. He's higher on DraftKings, so I think we'll leave him alone. Let's move on to the next game now. We've got the Cavs taking on the Memphis Grizzlies. The Cavs are somehow only favored by 5 in this game on the road, 212, unless the Vegas bookmakers know something about players resting more than we do. That seems like an extraordinarily low line for the Cavs in this game against the Grizzlies. no Chandler Parsons, no Wayne Seldon. Mario Chalmers is questionable for Memphis. At point guard, Andy Harrison, 5,500. Just playing really, really well, Harrow. I don't hate that for Harrison. With Seldon and Parsons both already ruled out, I think that he can get to 25 almost as a minimum. He can really shit the bed. We've seen that from him. But the way that he's playing, I feel a decent level of confidence in Andy. 4,500 for Georgie Hill. Good minutes today. The production's been piss poor, so I wouldn't be really interested there outside of tournaments. Chalmers, no. At shooting guard, Tyreek's at 7,900. The Cavs backcourt's a little bit different to Cavs backcourt of old, but we saw Satoransky go off today. 7,900 is probably pushing it a little bit for Tyreek, so I'd end up fading that. Rocket Rodney Hood at 47, no. The Plumber at 48. 3,800 for J.R. Smith, I'm all about it. 4,800, I think that takes away so much of the upside, and he just doesn't have the reliability factor. Well, Jordy Clarkson at 55, I'm really happy to fade that. At small forward, Dylan Brooks at 4,500, coming off some okay gains, but again, I think the upside's limited. I think the floor's low, so that's the sort of combination I like to avoid. Well,
LeBron James,
he's at 11,300. I think you should feel pretty good that LeBron's at least giving you 50. His lowest score in his last five games is 53. So that's a strong, strong cash option. At power forward, Jermichael Green at 47, played significantly fewer minutes than Jarrell Martin in the last game, so I have zero faith in Jermichael for cash. You could use him or Martin in your tournaments, not both. You could construct lineups with both of those guys. Martin at 4,300 dropped 33 in that last game. Don't have the conviction to say it's going to happen in cash, but 30 points at 4,300, 30 or 35-point upside is a tournament situation that you can try and exploit. Larry Nance at 56, too high. Well, Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
He is at 3,800, and that is interesting, but not enough to make me use him. At center, Marc Gasol is at 8,000. Big men have done decently well against the Cavs most of this season. Gasol has played well. I just think 8,000 is too high for him. Tristan Thompson at 39. You know what? Tristan Thompson at 3,900. I don't hate that for cash. I feel like I can shit on Thompson as much as possible, but 3,900, I think that he can very, very easily get you 20, 21 points. And that's your cash value right there, enabling you to spend up on Yanni, to spend up on LeBron, to spend up on Jim Harden, to spend up on whichever other players you want to look at. Yeah, that could be that just cheap center, get me 20, go for 25 upside. He had 27 today. It is a possibility for Tomo there. Deontay Davis at 3,500 is always a weird multi-GPP lineup guy, because if he can go off, he can give you 15 and 6 with 4 blocks in 18 minutes, and that could be a real difference-maker sort of a guy. On DraftKings, Gasol at 7,600 has a lot more value there, so I do like that, especially for tournaments. Well, Andy Harrison at 43, I love that. All about Andy Harrison at that price. Cash viable tournaments as well. Really, really enjoy that. Jermichael Green at 46 and Jarrell Martin, the same sort. Martin's at 44, exactly the same situation as it is on FanDuel. Well, LeBron at 11,200. Yeah, we're good with LeBron at that sort of a price. Nothing else really stands out as being significantly different. The Thompson 4,200 thing makes him less appealing than what he is on FanDuel, as we just highlighted. The next game, the Miami Heat, the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pelicans are favored by 2.5 when the total is 214.5 points. Kelly Olynyk is doubtful for the Heat, meaning we're going to get bigger opportunity for Bam Adebayo and for Jim Johnson and Justice Winslow there on that team. For the Pelicans, we don't know what their starting lineup will be. They started Emeka Okafor next to Anthony Davis for the last two games prior to the break. I imagine that will be the starting lineup again. Rajon Rondo's at 6,200. He was ejected in the last game and played only 8 minutes, but had a couple of big games before that. But at that sort of a price, I just don't see massive, massive upside for Rondo. Sure, in a tournament, he can drop a 50. He's had multiple 50-point games this season. For as bad as he's been, he has had 50-point games. And that's good upside there. But of course, it's only tournaments we're looking at. Tyler Johnson at 4,400. I feel very, very unsure about that. He is starting at shooting guard, but with the Duke around, with Dwayne Wade around, I just think his upside is pretty capped. And then got on the iron shoulder at 6,700. Dragic has done well against the Pelicans in the past. Got a real chance to do that again. I don't love it. It's not the best move out there, but there is something there. At shooting guard, The Duke at 3,700 tournaments, Dwayne Wade at 4,500, no interest, Drew Holiday at 8,500. He is cranking it at the moment. Drew, 48-point average over his last three, 55 in that last game against the Lakers. But 8,500 is a big chunk. And the Heat, defensively, are a really good team, especially against guards. I think that Holiday, given the price there, unless he was significantly cheaper, like a 7.2 or 7.3 sort of a salary, which he clearly isn't, he would be in play there. On DraftKings at 7,600, yeah, I can see why you'd use him, but on FanDuel, I think he's just too highly priced. Justice Winslow's at 3,700 because he is not a very good NBA player, or at least not a good fantasy contributor. Nothing to see with him. While Joshy Richardson down to 5,500 because his numbers have tumbled recently, 19-point average over the last three. I don't think it's the Dwayne Wade factor necessarily. He's had some bad shooting nights. At 5,500, sure, in a tournament, no worries. Each one more, I have no interest. At power forward, Jim Johnson, 5,100. He had 37 in 21 minutes in that last game before the break without Kelly Olynyk. He's got the opportunity for another big game there. Don't feel comfortable with him in cash just because of his up and downness, but of course, that is great tournament upside for Jim, and the matchup should be not too bad for him here. Check Diallo at 3,800. Just, I don't trust Gentry to give him 17, 18 minutes where he could get value. He played only 11 pre-break. Nick Mirotic, 7,500. 30 minutes only in the last game, but man, he still scored 37 points. At 7,500, though, is a pretty decent chunk. And I think with the extra 3 to 4 minutes coming off his upside if he plays off the bench, it's really tough to use him. But if they do go for the start with him and he plays 34 to 35, then sure, I'd be all about Mirotic if he happens to start. Bam Adebayo's at 4,900. I really don't have any interest in using Bam. Elevated salary, a matchup where I think Whiteside actually stays on the court a little bit more, not working out for me. As for Whiteside, 7,500. He averages 44 in the last three games against the Pelicans. He has been up and down in terms of his playing time, but still, he is averaging 36 points over his last five in 27 minutes, and I think this is going to be a game where the minutes push up, so I like him here. Tone Davis at 11.7. This dude is averaging 76 points. 76. That's stupid. In the last three games, 76 points. Yep, let's go. Let's bang in on Tone Davis as much as we can. On to DraftKings. Davis at 11-1, almost as big a no-brainer as there is. I love Whiteside at 71 as well. Well, Drew, as I mentioned earlier, at 76 is great. Nick Mirotic at 66 could be one of the best players of the day if he starts. I still think there's value there if he comes off the bench, but if he starts, I really enjoy that. Rondo and Dragic also have a bump there, and I wouldn't be totally averse to using Rondo at 5,800. I'd feel a little squeamish putting him into cash, but I think the upside makes him an interesting GPP guy. Jim Johnson at 47 also looks pretty nice on DraftKings. Let's go through to the next game. We've got the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are favored by 8.5, and the total is 226, the largest total of the day. Eric Gordon is listed as probable with a right knee bruise. At point guard, Chris Paul, 8,900. That's a nice price dip there for Chrissy. It's still a big amount of money to spend on him. I don't think I'd be ready to go with him in cash at that sort of a price, but there's definitely tournament value there with the way that he has been going. Jeff Teague at 6,700. Again, probably just a bit too highly priced. Defensively, not a great spot for him against Chris Paul at that salary. At shooting guard, Eric Gordon's at 45. You can miss me with that. Jimmy Harden's at 11.4. All about it. 54 point. Almost feels like a floor for Jim at this point. 65 upside, 70 upside. Shit, 100 upside for Jim Harden. You really have to use him in nearly every situation you can, I believe, as long as you can fit the pieces around him. So when I say guys are locks, especially these high-priced guys, they're not necessarily locks. Very few high-priced guys are locks just because you have to fit the right guys around them, especially for cash. You might find a great situation of a guy that's at 4,000 bucks who'd been start on the bench and now is going to play 35 minutes. You can lock that in everywhere. But a guy like Harden who could get you, you know, comfortably get you 55 here, but can you fit enough low-priced guys around him to make it all work? And that's not always the case. One of the other things that people did ask me in the survey, oh, can you give out lineups? Like, that's not what I'm doing. I'm not giving out, here is a FanDuel lineup. That's not what I'm about with doing these shows. Yeah, definitely not going through and giving out lineups. But Yeah, many people did ask for that, but that's, yeah, that's not what not what the show's about. We're not giving out, here's your lineup, go and do it. That's not how things go for me in this show anyway. Andy Wiggins at 6,000, he has been putrid. I'll have none of that. Jamal Crawford at 36, no interest. At small forward, Jim Butler at 9,200. Yeah, let's go. Totally fine to use him. Yeah, fine for cash, fine for tournaments. Not a lock-in guy for the same reasons I said with Harden. Trevor Ariza at 4,400. He is back for that from that hamstring issue. I don't love that for cash at all. I think there is some tournament upside there for Ariza, but with everyone healthy and the addition of Joe Johnson and coming back from a hamstring, I think we leave that alone. At power forward, Taj is at 5,400. Love it for cash. Got some tournament upside as well. Zero problem with using Taj Gibson. Ryan Anderson, Gorgie Jang, Luke Marmute, significant issues with using any of those guys. At center, Karl Anthony Towns, 9,700. He averages 64 points against the Rockets. Yep, in on him. It is expensive, but I think he can totally be used. Well, Clint Capella at 7,700. He averages 37 against the Timberwolves. A nice bump down in his salary, down by $800 as opposed to the last time that he played. I still don't fully love him here, especially because the Timberwolves have been guarding centers recently fairly well. Let's move on to the DraftKings side of things. Harden at 11.4, we love that. Towns at 9.4 is strong. Butler at 9,000 is good. Don't like Chris Paul on DraftKings. I think he's too expensive. Capella's okay. Teague, Wiggins, no. And Taj at 55, I think, is a pretty strong cash option. I've tried to cut this podcast, you know, trying to trim some of the fat off it. We've still got four games to go because there's just so much to talk about. The next game we look at is the LA Clippers and the Phoenix Suns. The Clippers are favored by 4.5. They're on a back-to-back. The total is 224.5 points. Tyler Ulis is questionable, or Tyson Chandler is doubtful. So we could get another big Alex Len game. Dragan Bender also gets an opportunity there. Remember the last game, Len played a massive amount of minutes, 38 minutes with Chandler out. So there's a chance for another big one there for him. For the Clippers, we don't know the status of Avery Bradley, who missed today's game with that groin issue that's been plaguing him most of the season. If he is out, you get a bump for Milos, you get a bump for Ty Wallace, and more minutes for Austin Rivers also. At point guard, as for Rivers, 5,600. I think that's totally fine to use him for cash. Get your 26 or 27 out of him. The minutes are constantly there. It's a piss-easy opponent. I'm fine with using Austin there. As for Lord Alfred Payton, 7,500, has really played well since joining the Suns. I'm still not fully in on him at that sort of a salary, but there's nothing wrong with using Payton in tournaments or in cash, I don't believe. Milosh is at 3,600. If Avery's out, maybe, but probably not. Ulis, absolutely not. Avery Bradley's at 3,900 because he has been atrocious. If there's any team that's going to get him back on track, if he actually plays, it's the Suns. So don't completely avoid him in your tournament settings. Lou Williams at $7,000. Yep, he could comfortably torch this team. While Devin Booker's at 7,700. You always got to like Booker as an option in cash and in tournaments. At small forward, the Roosters at 6,300. I liked him here. I like the matchup. We'll see what happens with the hand. But if he's ready to go, I like it. Well, Joshie Jackson at 5,900 has played really well, averaging 31 over his last five. Had 34 in the last game, even with Devin Booker back. But that was a game also that TJ Warren got into foul trouble. So there is a level of cautious optimism with Josh Jackson. TJ Warren at 6,000, really hard to use him, I think, at that price, just given the uncertainty with how things are going to go. Wes Johnson, Sam Decker, no way. At power forward, Dragan Bender at 3,800. We can only look at him really for tournaments, but there is upside there. While Toby Harris at 7,000, I think at Harris at 7,000, you almost have to consider a cash guy. He's just been so consistent all season, but especially since arriving in LA. Marquise Chris is at 3,700. Man, no, it's so, no, no. Montrezl Harrell at 4,500, putting up some pretty decent numbers. I don't really like him just because of the minutes limits that are in place for him in terms of who's ahead of him. At center, Alex Len at 4,500, really, really strong option there for Len. I think you can use him in cash, even though I'm not fully convinced of the rotation, but an absolute brilliant tournament guy. While DeAndre Jordan in a decent matchup, but he hasn't done well against the Suns in the past, averaging only 32 points in 31 minutes in the past three encounters. But he's worth a look there. I think there's probably going to be better center options around, like, you know, going spending up for Townsie, spending up for Drummo, or going real cheap with a Tristan Thompson sort of a player. Over on DraftKings, the Rooster at 63, again, the same stuff applies. Alex Len at 48. Yeah, Booker, Jordan, Williams, Payton, they're all way more expensive on DraftKings. So this game loses a lot of the appeal that it does have on FanDuel. Toby Harris at 6,900 is a pretty strong DraftKings play. But those other four guys I mentioned, their price is so much elevated that their points per dollar production, it's not looking as healthy as what we might hope. Austin Rivers at 57, I still think is in a pretty good spot, while hard to use TJ Warren and Josh Jackson, the same as how we looked at it with FanDuel. Let's go to the next game. It is the Portland Trailblazers and the Utah Jazz. We don't know if Ravishing Rick Rubio will start. He is questionable with that hip issue. If he is out, then we're looking at more minutes for Royce O'Neal and some more value, I think, for the Don Mitchell and Jingle and Joe Ingles also. At point guard, Lillard is at 9,100. The Jazz are notoriously tough on point guards, but Lillard doesn't care. He averages 61 against them over the past three games, so I'm ready to go back to Dame here. Shabazz Napier, no. Ravishing Rick at 74 had been crushing it, but a team that has also been really good against point guards is the Blazers, and we've seen them neutralize quite a few guys recently. Rubio's been good against them himself, though, averaging 40 the last three times out, but coming back off the hip injury, I think I'd fade Rav here. At shooting guard, CJ McCollum's at $7,000. Not a great history against the Jazz. I think I would leave him alone. Well, the Don at 7,700, no issue with using Don Mitchell at that price. Cash tournaments, in on it all. At small forward, Evan Turner, no. Jingle and Joe at 65. Now, I'll say this, if Rubio is out, I think that's not bad. It's still a bit high, but it's not bad. If Rubio's in, that's a little bit of a tough one to swallow. While Mo Harkless is at minimum salary, could start, could also drop 12 points as he did in the last game, which at minimum salary still doesn't cut it, so not looking like a great option. While Royce O'Neal is up to 4,600, and that's because he dropped He dropped 36 points in that last game that he played before the break and putting up some pretty decent numbers. Don't really love it too much for cash, but there is a little bit of upside there. At power forward, Jay Crowder at 46, playing quite well. Rubio out, I think that does help Crowder. Sorry, if Rubio is out, 4,600 for Jay. Great matchup for him. No problem with using Crowder for cash and for DFS. Derek Favors at 61, also playing quite well, so I don't mind using Favors as a cash option, given how well he's been playing. At center, Rudy Gobert's at 7,700. Gobert's averaging 36 over the last five, you know, almost where it needs to be at 7,700. Love the matchup for Rudy. No problem with Gobert for cash or for DFS. While Nurkic at 7,000, Yusuf Nurkic, centers against Gobert, generally not a great positive thing. Nurkic is up and down as it is, so that feels like a pretty strong fade. On DraftKings, Lillard at 8,700, we really, really like that. While Gobert and Nurkic at 58, I think you can look at as a tournament guy on DraftKings. The Don is at 8,100, that takes a little bit of value away for him, but he's been playing fantastically, averaging 42 over the last three. Maybe if Rubio was out, I'd consider Mitchell at that price. Otherwise, it might be DraftKings fade territory. Love Derek Favors at 57 here and Jay Crowder at 45. Both of those guys have value on DraftKings. Let's get in now to the second last game of the night. We've got the San Antonio Spurs and the Denver Nuggets. And for those of you playing in seasonal leagues, interesting news came out about Kawhi Leonard, who Pop said he'll be surprised if he plays again this season. No specification whether he meant regular season or playoffs. I'm going to guess he meant playoffs as well. And then Adrian Wojnarowski stating that Kawhi Leonard has been medically cleared, but he doesn't feel like he is ready to return. There's just an absolute shit ton of weirdness with this story. There were reports of, you know, friction between the Spurs and Leonard earlier in the season. Nothing really, it was reported by Zach Lowe and Woj. So you go, well, that's fair enough. But they never said, you know, what's the issue? Like, what's actually going on? Like, how are people thinking? We had no idea what any of that was. But it obviously appears to be over the return from this injury. Kawhi's not ready to come back. Pop seems pissed at it. I think if you're in a seasonal fantasy league, I think you really do have to consider dropping Kawhi. Now, I've said that before, and people are like, oh, no, you know, the Spurs, he's just as likely to be playing the next game. I think that the Pop lies, the Spurs lie narrative is completely overblown. I don't think it's the case at all. I think they've been as transparent as possible through pretty much everything. Look, you know what? They do rest guys mid-game. They'll say, well, you know what? Let's play Danny Green 15 minutes in the first half and not in the second half because we've got a back-to-back. But I can't, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I can't really think of many instances where they come out and say something and it's blatantly false, and then just do the opposite a couple of days later. There is this narrative that goes around about the Spurs. Oh, you can't trust the Spurs organization. I can't trust anything they say. I think they've been upfront about this Leonard injury, saying, look, we legitimately don't know. It's just not responding. We have no idea what's happening. And they kept giving updates when asked about it. And I think the whole Spurs pop lying untrustworthiness, I just don't believe that it's true. I'm happy to see examples of where I'm wrong. I just don't see that as being an actual true statement here. For the Nuggets, Millsap is still not back. He was saying, hey, I'm ready to go on Friday. And then Dr. Malone came out and said, nah, sorry, 2 to 4 more weeks. I've got no idea what the hell that means. How can you be ready to go, but then you still got to wait 4 more weeks? The 2 to 4 more weeks ties in with the mid-March return that that Malone said a few weeks back. So let's go with that. But who knows? Obviously, some sort of weird disconnect happening there with the doctor and Paul Millsap. At point guard in this game, the Blue Arrow, Jamal. Actually, let's a couple of things. LaMarcus Aldridge, Manu Ginobili, they both missed the last game prior to the All-Star break. They'll be fine. Mason Plumlee is ready to return. Let's cross our fingers. Let's hope that Malone starts Plumlee and Jokic together, because why don't we neutralize the best player that you've had on your team for I don't know how many years? If he does that, if he hands in that starting lineup sheet and it says Plumlee and Jokic, the GM should just come down and go, Mike, mate, I know you've got your medical degree to fall back on. Maybe you want to go pursue a career. Just be a local Denver area GP. Just do that, because if you put Plumlee next to Jokic, I don't think your future's in NBA coaching. We will see what happens. At point guard, you've got the Murrays, Jamal, DeJounte, 6,800 for the Blue Arrow, 6,200 for DeJounte. I think they are both absolutely fine options to use. DeJounte's got the easier matchup. Jamal is an underrated defender. He's considered to be horrendous. He's not horrendous, but he does give up a degree of fantasy points, but has been quite stout recently, and he's obviously got the higher ceiling here. I think you can use both of these guys. You're not going to be using Pat Mills or Tone Parker anywhere. Gaz Harris.
No!
He's at $6,000. I feel like you can go, I'm going to get 30 from Gaz Harris most nights, and you can feel pretty comfortable about it. Dan Green's at $4,400. I don't really love too much about him. Limited upside, low floor. That's the combination we try and avoid. While Farton Will Barton is dealing with strep throat, something I referenced earlier. $7,600 for Barton. That's quite expensive. And given the nature of the opponent, I think that is not a great way to spend that money. Devin Harris and Manu, a couple other shooting guards that we won't pay too much attention to. Torrey Craig's out as well. I should have mentioned that. At small forward, Rudy Gay is returning. A lot of hype about Rudy Gay. Or should I add him in standard leagues? I don't see it. He's going to be the backup behind Kyle Anderson. Maybe he plays 22 minutes a night, 23 minutes a night. At best, he's a top 110, 120 player. I just don't see it for Gay. He's not strolling into a 30-minute role. He wasn't doing that at the start of the season when Kawhi is out. And some of that time he was doing that without Kyle Anderson and still couldn't crack inside the top 100. So I don't really think that's going to be the case here. At 4,300, yeah, probably not going to be using him too often. Kyle Anderson's at 5,300, a low upside player in my opinion. Lowish floor, again, not an attractive option. While Baby Neck Wilson Chandler's at 6,000. He'd been crushing it before the break. I don't like it in this matchup. At power forward, Davis Bertans is at 41, a tournament option as a starter, could be useful, while LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,700. Aldridge has actually struggled against the Nuggets in the past, 32 points over the last three meetings. That's not great, but the matchup is a positive one for him, and I don't think it's a horrendous option. I just don't think it's the best one. At center, Pau Gasol at 5,700, no. Well, Nick Jokic, 9,700. Who will stop him? Will it be Aldridge or will it be Malone? We will see what happens. At 9,700, there is some tournament value there, but I hate the matchup, hate the return of Plumlee. That's why I don't want to use him for cash, but he dropped 75 in the last game before the break, so he's clearly got that upside for a tournament, but a couple of things aren't really working in his favor here. onto DraftKings side of things. Aldridge at 77. That's brilliant. I love that for Aldridge. I'd be happy to lock that into all lineups. Gaz Harris is fine. DeJounte and Jamal. I'd take Jamal over DeJounte here. Well, Jokic at 10-3. That's even more reason for me to stay clear. Just that excess price given the situation that we talked about. The last game of the night is the Mavs and the Lakers. Lonzo Ball should be back. He's listed as questionable, but all signs point to him returning to action. At point guard, Lonzo is at 6,500. I wouldn't feel comfortable about using him in his first game back, although Dennis Smith is a nice opportunity for him to go up against someone who can allow some points. Isaiah Thomas at 6,500, very, very hard to rely upon that. While Dennis Smith at 7,000, I like Smitty. I don't like spending $7,000 for him. JJ Barea, will he start again? I don't know. I would assume so. He is at $6,000. He dropped 44 in that last game before the break, putting up some great, great numbers. I don't feel super confident about what his role is or his level of production, but at $6,000, I don't think it's a horrible option. Yogi Ferrell is, so we'll leave him alone. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews at 55. No interest at that price. KCP at 57. Playing really, really well at the moment, Kentavious, averaging 32 over the last five. I don't fully trust it, especially with Lonzo back. There's an element of risk there. And the hitman, Josh Hart, at 4,800. No chance, especially if Lonzo's back. I cannot get behind using him at that salary. At small forward, Ingram's at 6,700. Had struggled to live up to that value even when he was playing point guard, so it might be tough to use him. He's more of a $6,100 guy rather than a 67. You could consider him, but I wouldn't be overly excited. While the pencil Harrison Barnes at 6,800, not really doing it for me. Rick Carlisle compared Doug McDermott to Reggie Miller. Did it with a straight face as well, which is amazing. He's a minimum salary player, Doug, because he is not a good fantasy option. At power forward, Dirk's at 58. I like this spot for Dirk. Love him for tournaments. While the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, at 6,500. He dropped 38 on the Mavericks last time out. His last game, though, he played 19 minutes and had 12 points. He is up and down. You don't want to be relying upon him for cash. 6,700 for Dwight Powell. If he was at 5,700, absolutely smashed it. Would love it. I just hate that elevated price. He's been playing really well, but I don't feel confident in his ability to produce at that level. Julius Randle at 73 tortures the Mavericks routinely. I love him here. Really like this spot for Randle. Brook Lopez at 5,000. Not interested in. If it's Zubats, 3,500. Zubats dropped 31 points in 20 minutes in the Lakers' last game before the break against the Wolves. Yeah, I think he's a tournament option here. I think he's got a sneaky little bit of value. On to DraftKings. Barea at 54. I love that. Julius Randle at 7-3. I'm strong on. While Brandon Ingram at 6,200 also in a good spot. Most of the other guys have similar value to how they look over on FanDuel, with the exception of Dwight Powell, who's in a much better spot on DraftKings. 5,800 for Powley and 5,200 for Dirk is also a pretty nice situation. Let's run through a couple of the other sites. On Yahoo for tournaments, I like Chrissy Paul over there. I like The Undertaker. I like Kelly Oubre, Dylan Brooks, Georgie Hill, Tyler Johnson, Dragan Bender. And for cash and tournaments, I've got Jarrell Martin, Dan Green, Jay Crowder, KCP, Dwight Powell, Corey Joseph, Barea, The Baptist, Satoransky, Andy Harrison, Alex Len, Townsie, Jim Butler, Oladipo, Drummond, Davis, and Harden. On Moneyball for tournaments, Oladipo and Jokic, Lowry and Irving, Drew Holiday, Miles Turner, Andy Harrison, The Baptist, Kelly Oubre, Corey Joseph, Jimmy Johnson, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. And for cash games, Jay Crowder, Taj Gibson, Austin Rivers, DeJounte Murray, Alex Len, The Rooster, Gaz Harris, Lou Williams, Devin Booker, Tone Davis, and Jim Harden. That brings us to the end of our first episode back from the All-Star break. If you like the podcast, go leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That would be fantastic. You can also find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify and on YouTube, where you can subscribe and leave a thumbs up and leave a comment. Make sure you are also checking out the brand new revamped Locked On NBA podcast. I will be hosting Monday's show, so check me out over there talking about things not fantasy related, but it's still going to be very interesting for you guys over there. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your DFS lineups. Hopefully your team gets a victory in this extended matchup. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Robin Lopez.